You gotten a lot of congratulations texts on your first Cubs win?
They're starting to come in. There's one from Mr. Ricketts, so that's a good one.
Okay, wait, Setup Nation, have you seen this yet? I know we want to get into the recap, but did you see this news this morning? It's up on your screen right now. Shane Bieber is coming to the Cubs. It's reported by Fan Nation. You can see right here, they said that Shane Bieber has finalized a trade with the Cubs. The former Cy Young Award winner is coming over after the injury to Justin Steele. It's crazy, though, as you continue to scroll through this. Look, it's actually April 1st. Oh, I'm so sorry. I had to, guys. I had to. Did that hurt? I'm sorry. Was that too far? Maybe I'm going to get some backlash for that. But come on, we got to have some fun. It's April 1st, and it's probably going to happen, by the way. When I do actually announce that and hear that, probably around the trade deadline when the Cubs are going for the playoff run, y'all are probably going to be like, hey, remember that one time that you said that Shane Bieber was coming to the Cubs and now it's actually happening and now we don't believe you? So, like, cry wolf. No, you'll have some actual articles that actually say it. But, hey, I'm in a good mood, too, because the Cubs finally won their first game of the year and it looked like they were going to blow that first game of the year. So, thank goodness they salvaged one in Texas. Let's just talk about that really quickly here on the Setup Man podcast. If you're not already subscribed, make sure you are. Hey, what was your favorite part of that ninth inning rally? Your favorite part of the Cubs' first win? They lost the home opener 4-3 in 10 innings. They lost Justin Steele, which we have a whole video about that you can go check out. We're not going to stew too much on that today. We will talk about the starting pitching a little bit. And then they were embarrassed in game two. Kyle Hendricks just did not have it going. Lost 11-2 and nearly let game three slip away. So let's dive in just a little bit into each one of these. In the opener, Justin Steele was cruising. He had a really rough first inning. I want to say it was about 24 pitches. He did strike out two, but you could just see he was getting the feel, probably getting some of those early opening day jitters out of his system as it was his very first opening day start. And then the Cubs get on the board. Christopher Morel with a leadoff triple ends up coming home on a sacrifice fly by Dansby Swanson. And, you know, it's 1-1. Looks like Justin Steele is looking pretty good and then tweaks that left hamstring. That was a moment that we all just kind of held our breaths. And, you know, from there, it just, you know, honestly just did not feel like we even cared about what happened in the opening day after that, right? It was one of those feelings of just, how is Justin? And especially after Jameson Taillon being down, and now you've had to force Javier Saad into the rotation. Our top two starters this year are now on the IL after just 4 2/3 innings into the season. And, you know, even though the Cubs got a break in the later innings, Miles Mastroboni apparently hits a foul ball, and the umpire doesn't see that it's foul tipped. Michael Busch races home from all the way from second. How about that? That was actually pretty impressive. We haven't talked about Michael Busch as a base runner, but that was an incredible read by Michael Busch to not only get to third, but say, hey, no one has any idea that this is a pass ball. This is not a foul tip. And he just raced home, got in time. Even though that happened and it felt like a lucky break, our minds were still, I don't know about you, my mind was still on Justin Steele. And then Adbert Alzolay gives up a game-tying home run to, I believe Brendan Miller called it Juan Pierre Jr. He's got a few more home runs than Juan Pierre, but man, that was not expected. You worry about a guy like Jankowski getting on base, wreaking havoc on the bases, and that's why Adbert kind of laid in that mediocre slider on 3-2. Didn't expect him to park it, and then you go into the 10th inning. Smiley gives up a two-out hit to Jonah Heim, and there's the game. We'll break down that choice of counsel using Smiley here in a bit as well. That was a rough way to start the beginner of the season. So then going into game two, you say, hey, give the ball to the veteran, Kyle Hendricks. It's his quote-unquote revenge game against the team that had drafted him. I doubt that Kyle Hendricks saw it that way. I'm sure Kyle Hendricks probably sees it as, hey, just thank you for drafting me, as Kyle got a chance to be able to come up with them, then traded for Ryan Dempster to the Cubs. this felt like, I mean, I even posted about it on Twitter. If you're not following us on Twitter at SetupManPod and also on Instagram at SetupManPod, I was very confident, to be honest, before the game. Let's commence game one, the first win of the season. Game two, let's do this thing. Dansby Swanson hits a 2-run homer to get you out in front, feeling pretty good. And then the wheels just completely fell apart. Walsh hits a game-tying 2-run homer. That guy ended up having a pretty good series, by the way. A guy that not many people know about. I know I didn't know much about him. And then Kyle Hendricks can't even get through 4 innings. Second game in a row that you see a Cubs starter not be able to make it into the 5th. And then after that, it was just like, okay, let's just get some moral victories. Even though it was 5-2, you kind of felt like, okay, potentially they could get back in it. It just, the pendulum had swung into the Rangers' favor. Then they bring in Ben Brown, who had just gotten his call up because of the Justin Steele injury. And hey, he comes in and he has a closest thing to a lockdown first inning. He walked the first batter, but then got the next two guys, including his first strikeout of his career against Josh Jung. And then he comes out for a second inning. And I was kind of like, do we want to chance this? And it exploded from there, unfortunately, for Ben Brown. 11-2, the final on that one. And then here in game three, wow, Christopher Morel with an electric 3-run homer right out of the gate. Then some shaky defense from Morel that leads to 2 runs, but hey, still up by 1. You get a 2-run single by Ian Happ to make it 5-2. And then a just really bad play from Dansby Swanson, which you can probably say that a handful of times as long as he's been a Cub, that leads to a 3-run inning. And now you've got the Rangers tied up at 5-5. Jordan Wicks, who really did not deserve to not make it to the 5th inning, gets kicked out after 4 innings, mainly just because of pitch count. But of the 5 runs that scored, only 2 of them were earned. And it just, honestly, at this point, you just had these vibes of 2023. Luckily, the Cubs reversed this, but I mean, I was feeling this the entire, really, first 26 innings of baseball here in Texas. September 2023, we all remember it, right? Cubs have a pretty decent lead in the wild card. It feels like they have their destiny in their hands, but starting pitching, just not making ends meet. Lack of clutch hitting. It was, how many times was it bases loaded with 2 outs and just nothing happens? How many times did the leadoff hitter get on and no one scores? How many times do you have your middle of the lineup coming up with 2 guys on, 1 or no out, and no one scores, right? And it just, that just kept on happening all of September. And that's what we were seeing here in the first really 2 3/4 game. No one reached second base in that second game. That's, you know, Dansby Swanson's 2-run homer came with a guy on first base. No one reached second base. The bullpen as well, not holding leads. That first game, that was kind of tough, right? Because Justin Steele comes out. You don't really know what's going to happen, but they blew 2 leads in that second game in that first game with Justin Steele. But hey, the trend was reversed. Even with the bad defense, the trend was reversed by that 9th inning. You had in the 9th inning, Michael Busch starts it with a 1-out rally with a walk. Nico Horner with the infield single. Mike Tauchman walks. Miles Mastroboni, for some reason, is pinch hitting. He hits into a fielder's choice, so no run score on that. But then Ian Happ, Seiya Suzuki, and Cody Bellinger come up clutch with 2 outs. Ian Happ walks, scores the winning run. Seiya Suzuki with the 2-run single to pad the lead, and then Cody Bellinger with a nice addition as well with the RBI single. And then you got Adbert coming in, 1-2-3. That's a great bounce back from him, and it's a great way to leave town, along with the fact that now today is the home opener for the Cubs. This all feels a lot better. But the biggest concern with all of this still being said, yes, the starting pitching, for sure. Justin Steele is down. Jameson Taillon is down. You didn't get 4 innings from Hendricks. You didn't get more than 4 innings from Jordan Wicks. Now you got to rely on a rookie who has never thrown a major league pitch in Shota Imanaga today, making history at Wrigley Field, being the very first MLB player to make his MLB debut at Wrigley Field. That's pretty special, but He's never thrown a pitch in the majors. How's he going to do? Javier Assad was probably going to start in the bullpen to start this year. Now you got to stretch him out to be a starter. There, yes, all of that is very concerning, but the bigger concern for me is the defense. This team is built off of catching and throwing the ball, maybe minus third base, maybe minus some question marks at first base. Aside from that, Gold Glove all across the outfield. If you count Seiya Suzuki's Gold Glove in the NPB, you have a guy in Yan Gomes behind the plate who has received Gold Glove votes. You have Dansby and Nico and Belly up the middle who have all gotten Gold Gloves. This is a team that has to catch and throw the ball if they're going to win. And that just did not happen in any sense of the word during really all three games here in Texas. Now, there were three errors in the first three games, but let's be honest, there should have been, if we're counting, maybe they're not mental errors, they're not physical errors, but they're the plays that you expect this team to make. In the first game, it was Nick Madrigal when Adolis Garcia hit that liner over to him on one hop. It should have probably been a play that he makes. Instead, he boots it a little bit. Now it's first and third. Then you had Christopher Morel and really a non-competitive situation. The Cubs were already down big when Ben Brown was on the mound, but a line drive over to him that he completely whiffs on. That's becoming a little bit of a concern for me. It happened in spring training. I didn't think it was a big deal when it happened. I just thought it was kind of a blip on the radar, but then it happens again the second game of the season, and you're starting to wonder, hey, is the throwing arm not the only issue here for Christopher Morel? Is there some hand-eye coordination issues on line drives as well, which would be a very strange thing because much of that is intuition, right? Intuition-wise, the guy can hit a fastball, and hitting a fastball, reacting to a pitch is much like catching a line drive at third base off the bat. It's just boom, it's there, right? So it's kind of strange that Christopher Morel has had that happen to him a couple times. And then really in game three was when it all, I mean, this is why we're really happy to leave Texas with a win, because that could have come unraveled very, very quickly. You had Morel with a throwing error that led to two runs in the second inning. You had Dansby with just a very funky play. You watch the replay and you almost can see it's almost like he's more concerned that that ball was going to hit the bag. Then you had Seiya losing the ball in the lights. Okay, well, let's just be honest. We all had flashbacks to you know which game in 2023 in September in Atlanta. Seiya might have to start wearing sunglasses at night, right? Cue the music. I don't know how I can't relate to that. I've never played in a game where the lights have been an issue. I've only played in games where the sun is an issue. I can tell you that is a real issue. That led to a what is recorded as a triple, but let's be honest, that was an error if we're counting it as the in the column of shouldn't have happened kind of plays. Luckily, that runner didn't score as well. So there was a little bit of luck involved on the win on Sunday. But if this team is going to win, they're going to have to catch the ball. And I have a question for you all out there. Go ahead and leave your thoughts in the comments. You hear it all the time. Hitting is contagious. Pitching is contagious. How about fielding? Is fielding contagious? I don't know if any of it's contagious. We're going to have a whole discussion on that. I know JD doesn't think it's contagious. He's talked about that on air before. I do personally believe that much of this game is contagious. And I think fielding is contagious. Just like when a pitcher isn't throwing enough strikes and you as the outfielder or the infielder start to feel the tension, right? Oh, if a ball is put in play, I am now really forced to make this play because our pitcher can't figure it out. I think that same mentality happens when another player on the team makes an error. Now you start putting added pressure on yourself of, oh, Morel had that error. Now I need to make this play for him. And that can carry over that those feelings that those negative thoughts that get into your mind as a fielder. Remember, baseball, like it's not like football. It's not like soccer. It's not like basketball. You're not given the ball right after that. You have time to stew on all of this. All these thoughts that come in your mind can carry throughout a game. And for that reason, Christopher Morel makes an error. Is it possible that Dansby then makes an error and Seiya makes an error And some of the, you know, Mike Tauchman almost dropped a fly ball as well. Or guys kind of playing with a stick up their butt because they're all trying to pick up each other. Bad defense transferring from one guy to the next, I think, is a contagious thing. Personally, that's where I'm at. I'd like to know what you think. Let me know in the comments. And the last thing I'll say about the defense is that, you know, hey, Christopher Morel plus one on Sunday. What do I mean by that? He created three runs at the plate. He had a chance to create a lot more, by the way, with a few other situations with runners in scoring position. But he created three runs at the plate on Sunday. And because of an error, he allowed two runs in the field because of an error. So plus one. Do you have the patience? Are you in a position right now of saying yes? If as long as he's like locked at even or in the plus column of creating more runs than giving up, I'm okay with him at third base. Now, me personally, I am. I don't know how much longer I'll say that, to be honest. I at this point, if he has games like Sunday, I'm going to be okay with that. If I was texting with a buddy of mine, diehard Cubs fan, and then he said, if he hits 260 with 40 bombs, 100 RBIs, over 900 OPS, and he makes 25 errors this year, I think I'm going to be okay with that. Right. I think I can get behind that. Then there's going to be those games, right, where it's going to be a bases loaded situation in the eighth inning and he's going to make an error and it's going to cost the game. At that point, right, I know all of Cubs Twitter is going to be calling for them to figure it out. When's Matt Shaw coming up, right? Some of you crazy people out there that still want Nick Madrigal to get more bats than Christopher Morel are going to start speaking up. You Miles Mastroboni fans still haven't figured that one out, are going to start speaking up. I still think most of you are past the Patrick Wisdom bus, but at the same time, if Patrick Wisdom starts to hit, hey, when are we giving Wisdom more at bats, right? I think those things are still going to creep up, but me personally, I'm okay as long as Christopher Morel is staying in the plus column, not just game by game, but overall, he's creating more runs than he's giving up. I'm going to be okay with that for now, but I will say I am very excited if he can get us out of that mindset and get us to a place where it's like, hey, this is more than just a serviceable third base. This is like a league average third base. If he can get to like a league average third base, it was spoken about actually on Sunday. Marcus Semien made either 25 or 35 errors when he was with the A's at shortstop 1 year. And now he's a gold glove second baseman. If Christopher Morel can figure that out, if he can go over to Ron Washington or to Marcus Semien and say, give me some pointers, because whatever the Cubs are doing, it just doesn't seem to be working. And he can figure that out and at least be league average. Now, the ripple effect that has in this lineup, guys, that's the exciting thing. Okay, let me stop for a second and explain that. Ian Happ DH'd on Sunday. Ian Happ is a gold glove outfielder. I don't care what you say about last year. He won a gold glove last year. He won a gold glove the year before. He is a very much above average left fielder. Just look across the league. Most left fielders are not serviceable fielders. Ian Happ is. Because he was the DH in left field on Sunday, Mike Tauchman played left field. I'm going to be completely honest. I think Mike Tauchman has a great eye. I think he has a decent approach at the plate, but he's not a game-changing bat. Because we had to have Mike Tauchman in the lineup is because of Ian Happ having a DH. Now, that's the situation now. But if Christopher Morel has to DH, well, there's going to be the same kind of domino effect. It's either going to be, well, now Nick Madrigal has to be at third base or Miles Mastroboni. And because of that, you have, again, a non-game-changing bat in the lineup. But if Christopher Morel can figure out third base, who's your DH? Well, a couple things. Number one, right away, it could and should be Alexander Canario, who has a game-changing bat. He hasn't proven that yet in the majors, but he's shown it in the minors. He did at least show it a little bit in the majors last year in the very few at-bats that he got. We won't need to talk about that, but the very few at-bats that he got last year in the majors, you said, I want this guy in the lineup more often, right? That's the kind of bat that can be in the lineup more often now, all right? Against lefties, Patrick Wisdom or Garrett Cooper. More so, Patrick Wisdom is a game-changing bat against left-handed pitchers. There's the other domino effect if Christopher Morel can figure out third base. Here's the last one that's most exciting. PCA comes up. You know what's going to happen next, right? Cody Bellinger moves over to first base. Well, where does Michael Bush go? Michael Bush is the DH against righties. Alexander Canario and or some sort of version of Canario and Wisdom are the DHs against a lefty. Guys, that is the game-changing lineup that we want to see. That's the lineup that I'm excited for come May or June when PCA, if he produces the way we expect him to, gets called up if Morel figures out third base. This is why there's so much excitement about this team this year, is because of the upside, where last year it was there wasn't enough upside, right? There was like, hey, we have a serviceable potential opportunity to get Trey Mancini back to, you know, maybe 20 to 25 home runs. That's not a high enough ceiling. Morel hitting 40 home runs and playing an average third base. Now we're talking. Okay. So anyway, that's where my biggest concern lays right now, lies, however you want to say that, is over in the defense. It all starts with Dansby and Nico and Belly up the middle, but it has to be contagious and solidified with guys like the corner outfielders, especially Saya. Saya, by the way, not to overlook it, made an incredible play in the first inning when Kyle Hendricks was on the mound. That saved Hendricks from giving up a run in the first inning. As we know, that didn't end up going anywhere, but that's the kind of Saya we need to see. And then the corner infield positions need to be shored up as well. And Morel has his own destiny in his hands for that. All right, let's do a little bit Monday morning quarterbacking. I am going to be doing this. I am going to be putting a grain of salt on all this. And every single time, you have to know, I am not Craig Counsell. I am not getting paid $8 million a year. I have never got paid a single dollar. Actually, I got paid $500 to be an assistant freshman baseball coach 1 year. So I guess I have just that much validity behind my name, is I have been a paid coach before. So basically what I'm saying is Craig Counsell me on the same level. No, of course not. But I want to give a few good moves. I want to give a few like, well, what were we doing right there? So the good moves. I loved that Ian Happ was thrown back into the leadoff position, even after a bad start to his leadoff, not career, because he used to lead off in 2018 for a little bit there, but his renewed leadoff career. He went 0 for 4 that first time, had a walk, didn't look so hot in game one, but was thrown back out there 4 for 5 with a walk and two RBIs. I loved that. That was where all year last year I wanted Ian Happ, because he does one thing extremely well. He gets on base and he wears down the pitcher. All of his at-bats, for the most part, are going to be deep counts. Now, you say Mike Tauchman's the same way. Yeah, but Ian Happ has that threat of power as well at the top, which is what I really like to see. Seiya Suzuki, Cody Bellinger, Christopher Morel, 2-3-4. All three games, 2-3-4. I loved that. I loved seeing both, all three of them in the middle there getting the most at-bats. That was one thing that Craig Counsell talked about at CubsCon, is the goal is to get the best hitters the most amount of at-bats. The last good thing I will say is Miguel Amaya catching Jordan Wicks. That really showed me that Craig Counsell was doing his homework, because you could have easily had Miguel Amaya catch Kyle Hendricks and then go back to Gomes. But Miguel Amaya caught Jordan Wicks in a ton of games while they both were at AA. Wicks is extremely comfortable with him going out there pitching the first game of the season. I thought that was a great call by Counsell to have Amaya catch Wicks and not catching Hendricks. Because, you know, I think we're going to probably see that that's the trend. It's probably going to be each series, unless you're seeing Gomes with some sort of nagging injury or he's slumping, it's probably going to be Gomes starts two games, Amaya starts one. That to me feels like what the trend is going to be. So those were the three things I really like. The three things that I was like, that feels PTSD-ish to me. Number one, and we'll just go in order here. Drew Smyly in the 10th inning. A lot of you, you know, someone posted on Twitter, Well, who else is he supposed to choose to go in there? Well, actually, he had two very solid options besides Smiley. He had Luke Little and Jose Quas. Assuming for a second that it was because he was a lefty, okay, put Little in. And then if the Cubs get a lead in the next inning, then you put in Quas. Now, pitching in extra innings is extremely tough ever since COVID. Let's just be completely honest. And credit to Smiley. He did extremely well last year in the bullpen. 251, I want to say, ERA in the bullpen. So it's not like it was a bad move. It was just kind of an eye-rolling move of like, we have better options. And I don't know what it is if Council and Ross both are sipping from the same Kool-Aid, that they think that Luke Little like cannot pitch in high-leverage situations. But the guy is yet to pitch in a close game or with a lead. Every single time he has pitched, it's either been because the Cubs are up big or they're behind. And the same thing happened on game two. Cubs are down 5-2. In comes Luke Little, by the way, not even extremely sharp, still looked dominant, went through the 8-9-1-2, got the only guy to get Corey Seager out all of game two. That's the kind of guy that I think Luke Little is. And for that reason, I expected to see Little followed by Quas, and then it goes another inning. Then, okay, great. You know, now you got Smiley. Also, the fact of that being that your last guy being Smiley can stretch it out a little bit, where Quas and Luke Little are not going to do that. So had it gone into the 14th, 15th inning, which was unlikely, what were you going to do if you put in Smiley for one inning and then put in Quas and then put in Luke Little? And it's like, well, that's all of our guys. So that was a weird one to me. The second game, Ben Brown makes his debut, comes out after one inning. We're all posting on Twitter. Congratulations, Ben Brown. Great start to your career. So excited, yada, yada. Oh, he's coming back in for a second inning. That's interesting. We're down by three runs. It's late. Don't you want to give this guy something really positive to end his first Cubs inning with, which was a zero? And then he just got shellacked. The control wasn't there. You could almost get this sense of like Ben Brown was surprised that he was sent back out for a second inning. And I don't want to say that that's an excuse, but there's this like, when you think about it, and you know, I've talked to guys that have made their major league debuts. One of them that comes to mind is Matt Strom. Ben Brown's debut felt a lot like Matt Strom's debut. Matt Strom is a left-hander for now the Phillies, came up with the Royals, and he was like, I was getting ready to pitch in a minor league game that day, and then I was told not to dress up, and then suddenly I'm being told I'm being called up to the majors, and I'm like, well, I'm not pitching today, and then he gets called in, and he's like, oh my God, I'm in, and then he throws up some a zero, and then it's just like all of the stress of the day just exited his body, right? And I have that feeling that Ben Brown, the same thing happened. All the stress of just like, whew, got that out of the way. And then Council says, you're going back out there. What? Oh, but mentally, I've already exited. I'm out of this game. And has to go back out there. And you saw what happened. That's what I think happened. Again, I have no idea. But I really wish Council had just said, hey, great job. Congratulations. Welcome to the show. Put your arm on ice. So either way, I'm looking forward to him making a start. I'm pretty sure that's why they brought him up. I don't think they brought him up just to be a reliever. This team needs starters, so I expect to see him start next week. And then lastly was the Miles Mastroboni pinch hitting with the bases loaded, one out in the Easter game. Pinch hitting for Miguel Amaya. Why? Miguel Amaya has two hits, swinging it pretty good. This guy's a little bit wild. I don't know what his splits are, but what I do know is we have a tendency to overthink righty on righty, righty on lefty. It is extremely hard as a Major League Baseball player to get up off of the bench after playing for, or after not playing for eight innings, and then come in and see 97 mile an hour fastballs and dirty sliders. And I think he has a splitter as well. That is extremely hard. Add on top of that, that Miles Mastroboni has not proven that he is a solid major league bat off the bench. I see him more as a defensive replacement, to be completely honest, with some speed. I even tweeted about it before the results of the at bat. I said Amaya has two hits. There's one out and bases loaded, and he's being pinch hit from Miles Mastroboni. My eyebrow is raised, and I'm holding my breath. And sure enough, he hits a weak ground ball. Semien throws it home, gets the force out. Thank God for Leclerc being not so on his game and walks the next batter to bail out Mastroboni and Council, because Council probably would have gotten some questions about that after the game. So, you know, a little bit of PTSD here with some of these moves, and I trust Council. I also realize there is a, you know, transition that has to happen here where he has to get used to who he's got, what those guys are going to be good at, right? There is a little bit of homework that still needs to be experienced and can't just be done on paper. So giving him the benefit of the doubt, but those were the three things that I was kind of iffy about. What do you think? Was there anything I missed of those three things? Do you think I'm wrong about any of them? Do you agree? Let me know in the comments. Dunce cap of the week. Well, it's two parts. One is in our control. One is not. Our, meaning the team, not mine. Justin Steele going down with the injury. That is just such a tough loss. He's going to be out till at least the beginning of May. You hope that that is where it ends, but we'll see what happens. And then the defense was just the dunce cap of the week. We got to tighten that up. So let's see that through. Fly the W moment of the week, of course, is the first of many W's for this year. 9-5 win on Sunday. Fly that W, sing that song, go Cubs, go. Let's do it again and again and again. And my feel good moment of the week, despite the second inning of his career going pretty horribly, I'm going to just focus in on inning number one of Ben Brown's career, putting up a zero, getting called up just a few hours later, getting in his first game, a very anticipated game to get called into, especially because he followed the guy he got traded for. How cool is that? Dave Robertson, once a Cub, was traded to the Phillies for Ben Brown. Dave Robertson pitched in that game. One pitch later, Ben Brown is throwing his first major league pitch. If that is not baseball and all of its beauty, I don't know what is. So congratulations to Ben Brown for getting to the show. And today we are opening the season at Wrigley Field. That's what's coming up, taking on the Rockies for three games. So let's see how this goes. These are three games. You hate to say it. 100% hate to say it. It is game 4, 5, and 6 of the season, but with such a tough April, I am putting it out into the universe that the Cubs at minimum have to win this series. But honestly, if I'm being completely serious about all this, they have to sweep this series. This series needs to be all three games in the bag to give themselves a little bit of breathing room on what's going to be a April that will be extremely happy with a 500 record. With your top two pitchers coming down on the IL and facing, I think it was 16 of the 27 games in April are against against last year's playoff teams. This is an extremely tough schedule, and a 500 record by the end of April for a team that's a little bit banged up right now would be a blessing. So win three games against the Rockies, make it a little bit easier. Setup Nation, I'm going to go put my arm on ice. Let's sing that song again today at Wrigley. Shota Imanaga, 11:20 my time, 1:20 Central Time. First pitch. See you there.